Hello friends, this is Professor Venkat Iyer. I am introducing you to this lovely subject called Human Resources Management. I would like to talk about this subject, not as a subject, it's more of an approach towards dealing with people. Many people are under the impression that HRM is about a department, about a set of people who are handling manpower in the company. But I would like every one of you to look at it from a very expansive angle. We are not working like islands. We don't work like commandos. We work as a team. We work with interdependency with each other. That being the case, we need to know how people are engaged in the larger goals of the company. So every person with whom you're working within the company, we call them as internal customers these days. Right? So every person who's there is also a human resource. Now, human resources management in this subject, there are a number of topics we'll be taking. But as we take the topics, I would request each of you to look at these topics from your own angle as an employee of the company where you're working. It is not that when you have a problem, you go to an HR department and get it solved. But if you know many of these processes, it becomes easier for you to get things done. So I would look at it in this manner, that it is an approach of knowing who is working where, how are we dealing with the people, why is this person working in a certain position, etc., etc. Because it actually adds to the richness of your experience and the way you interact with people. Right? So with this, I'd like to start this particular slide. I'm introducing you to Human Resources Management, Chapter 1. So here we start off by saying, we have, as usual, we have the objectives as the first slide. So after studying this chapter, you should be able to understand what is human resources management, functions involved in HRM, how HR has evolved over the years, the history of HR, right? Differentiate between personnel management, a terminology, a process we were using long back, versus industrial relations, versus HRM, versus HRD. These are all terms which we need to clarify. Next, we'll be going to process of HRM in an organization, how it is done. Factors affecting HRM in an organization, and we talk about future of HRM, strategic HRM and HCM, that is human capital management. Let's see. Objective. Then we have a structure to the whole approach in this chapter. So we have a structure which is basically functions in HRM will be covered under 1.2. In 1.1, we are covering nature of human resources management. 1.2 is functions in HRM. 1.3 is evolution of HRM. 1.4 will be difference between personnel management, HRM and HRD, and industrial relations. And HRM process is 1.5. 1.6 will be factors affecting HRM, 1.7 future of HRM, and we'll be summing up with a summary, right? So let's get on to the very first one, nature of human resource management, HRM. HRM is a process where people and organizations are brought together to meet the goals of both. Very simple statement, but very profound. In the subject principles of management, we have learned that about the four M's, men, machine, materials, and money. These four are brought together as inputs to run an organization, and they are integrated with the fifth input called methods M. Men, machine, materials, money, integrated with the fifth M, which is methods. Now, among these four M's, the most critical M is men, or manpower, or human resources. Why? Because it's a living entity, unlike the other three. And this living entity is running the organization. It has got some qualities, some properties, which can make or break the organization. So there's a lot of focus on that in the recent years, last about 20, 30 years, we are talking about HRM everywhere. Earlier it was not so, right? So it's a process where people and organizations are brought together. What's an organization? An organization is a social entity. An organization is created because society wants some goods or services for their needs. You're listening to me. You need quality B-school education. That's why you're listening to me, right? And you are a member of the public who has now become a student. And we as an organization, V-School, are the organization which is catering to you. We also have a role, we make a promise to you that we are going to give you this, this, this. So the organization is a social entity. And here what are we doing? We are making a promise to you that we are going to give you a quality education. And we strive, we work hard to make our promise happen to you. So that's an organization. Now, since I made a promise, I was ensured that I'm optimally utilizing men, machine, materials and money with the excellent methods. This video shoot itself is one of the methods which we adopt as a competitive factor over many others. So people, the right people and the organization, they come together. They are brought together to meet the goals of both, right? This is a very initial stage. People are brought together to make the things happen. This is a role by HRM, Human Resources Management, does it. There's a department called HRM, but I would not like you to look at the department alone. I would like you to look at it as an expansive thing. If you're running a particular department, you're an HOD or you're a team leader, you have some people working with you, right? So you are also an HR person. Because if you know these various processes, which I'll be talking in this whole chapter, you'll also know that I'm also an HR person. I have people working with me and these things are applicable to me. So tomorrow, if you want to have a recruitment selection to be done or you want to have some sort of a training development to be done, you know what exactly you want. You don't have to run to the HR all the time. I'm not saying HR is not important. The department is important. They are actually doing a great job. But individually, user departments are those which are taking the services of the HR department, like the production, operations, marketing. If you are a user department, then you also learn to understand that you are also having HR in you. So I want everybody to shift their paradigm of thinking. HRM is somebody else's domain. Whatever we want, we have to go to them. It is not my domain. No. Just imagine if you have a requirement of a manager in your department, you'll send a requisition to the HR department, right? And what they'll do, they'll create the requisition and they'll try to look for a person. They'll do the hiring. But the manager is going to work under you, with you. So if you do not know whom you want, there may be what is called a Chinese whispers, which means you'll say something, it'll go to them. They may misunderstand or they may understand in their own way. And then there is bound to be certain type of a gap between what you actually need and what you actually get. This is very common in many companies. So you as a HOD, you as a person who wants a manager, you should know what you want. You should be able to articulate and you should be a part of the whole process of recruitment selection. So this statement is very profound. It's just not about getting people together, but there's a lot of involved working between the organization and the people. Even though organizations may be technologically advanced, it's the people who often offer competitive advantage to the organization. People who offer competitive advantage to the organization. I keep saying this in every forum, in the classroom, in my training programs, etc. I keep telling people that you may hire the best of technology. You may hire the best of machines. You may have a lot of cash with you. At the end of the day, it's people who can make or break the organization. People, their attitudes, their behaviors. There's a subject called OB, organization behavior, which I teach. In that, you must have learned how behavior matters a lot. The behaviors, the whole human beings, manpower, human resources, they can actually take the company ahead by their attitudes, by their collective actions. So there's a competitive advantage to the organization. But on the other hand, if they don't do it, the organization's advantage is lost. It becomes a disadvantage. So this is a second important point to be noted. Third is, people offer skills, capabilities, systems, practices, etc. that help an organization to execute its strategy successfully. What are strategies? Long-term goals. I would like to achieve something in the long term. This is the year 2022, we are ending now. So if I have to plan for something for the year 2023 end or 2024, that becomes a strategy. Obviously, you have learned it, that in a strategy, we are getting into the unknown. So when you're getting into the unknown, we need to have a creative approach. creative approach means what? I've got to try certain things. I must be having an open mind. The things may change tomorrow. Like we had the COVID 2 years back. We never knew that will come. Anything can happen. So this strategy is actually factoring. As far as the human imagination can go, it tries to factor what are the possibilities that could happen in the next year, in the next month, in the next few years. So that is something wherein we are getting into the unknown. Strategies are well driven by the right people with skills, capabilities, systems, practices, etc. So obviously we need to have people who are having skills. Skills are doable actions. Information plus repeated actions gives you a skill. What is information? I have an information about how to drive a car. I go to Google and I read it. I can read everything. I can make a research paper on that. But I have to sit in the car and drive it. Only then I'll be learning the skill of driving. But skill doesn't come easily. Skills come with fits and starts. So when I drive for the first time, there's a likelihood that I may meet with a minor accident or I may not be able to, I may do some fumbling. It happens. So every time you do it, you keep on repeating. When you repeat the action, your errors reduce and then you become you start mastering it. That's what is skills, which leads to competency later on. Capabilities, the ability to do something, that is capability. I have the ability to talk, that is capability. Then we have systems, all the interconnected parts and practices, certain processes, certain day-to-day actions, etc. There are many such things, a few have been put here. All these things make the company achieve its strategic goals successfully. It is just not that one fine morning you get up and you do something. It's something which is systematic, which goes in a framework, which goes with a certain control systems, and then things happen. Let me add at this point that human beings by nature love infinite freedom, right? By nature, everybody loves infinite freedom. But when you work in an organization, there are control systems. There's a position given to you. There's a place given to you. And there you have to learn how to fit into that. And you must learn how to achieve the goals properly. Now, this is something which goes contrary to the human nature. Human nature loves freedom, but here we are putting you into a certain control environment. Like the classroom. We have this personal contact program for you people. We also have virtual class. So what happens is during that prescribed time, you have to sit there with the discipline. When will man be disciplined? Only when he wants something in return. If your goal is very strong, if you really want to do this course well, then you'll say, okay, I'm cutting off everything. I'm going to sit from say 9 to 12:30 in the PCP classroom in the college. And then I'll be listening to the professor. I'll be interacting, etc. So remember one thing. No goal is achieved without a discipline. And for the discipline, we need these skills, capabilities, etc. And plus, we have to learn to be with the vision of the company. It's very important, right? Taking it further, functions in HRM. What are the various functions? Here, a few have been enunciated. Planning. Forecast based on environment, mission, objectives, and strategies. You all learned planning in principles of management. Now, what are we doing in this case? We are forecasting. Forecasting manpower requirements. Manpower planning is a separate chapter. Based on environment, environment is inside and outside. Within the company, there's an environment and there's an environment outside. Within the company, there are certain needs, requirements, strategies, etc. On the basis of which I'll be forecasting the manpower. Okay. Now the company is going for an expansion. So I need more people. The company is downgrading. It's downsizing. So I may have to cut down on things. So internal environment are many. We'll be discussing it down the line later. Second is mission. What is the mission of the company? At this point of time, I wanted to note down there are 5 steps. We have the vision at the top, which is a dream for the company. The dream with urgency to act and also the dream which has got a huge amount of passion. There are 3 things in a vision. Dream, urgency to act and a passion. I want to do it. That's sort of an urge. 24/7, I'm obsessed with that. That's a vision. That vision gets articulated in the form of a mission or a mission statement. So it is in words. People know that this is the madness in me. Because vision is seen as a madness in people who don't understand a vision. Madness, inverted commas, right? This mission, and objectives. The mission leads to a strategy, which has got three time frames: long term, medium term, and short term. So it tells you the plans. What are we going to do in 2 years from now, 1.5 years from now, 6 months from now? So this is defining, converting something which is generic into something which is specific. The objectives gives you a direction and a purpose. And the next comes the goals. Okay, so these are the things that we need to plan. Planning is all about that, you know, making a blueprint on a time frame of the future. Planning is all about future orientation. Staffing. Staffing has everything to do with people. You have learned in Principles of Management the six processes: planning, organizing, staffing, directing, coordinating, and controlling. And staffing is very, 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 very critical. Appropriate people for the appropriate skills. They say the right person for the right job. And there's also another paradigm which says the right job for the right person also, which I'll be explaining down the line. It involves HR planning, job analysis, recruitment, and selection. I'll be covering this later. Okay. Next comes developing. Analyzing learning requirements to ensure that employees upgrade their knowledge and skills from time to time. Obviously, today it's very common. Developing people. When you join a company, you have got certain types of mindsets, certain skills with you. Operational skills as well as human skills. Operational skills means what? If you're a software engineer, writing a program, coding is an operation skill, which you're supposed to know. That's the reason you're hired in the company. Over and above that, you're working with people. So you need to develop people skills. Now, these are upgraded from time to time. You have to upgrade them. And this upgradation is coming under the gamut of what is called a developing. You know, we have this topic, training and development. So development is all about people, right? Next comes monitoring, job evaluation, performance appraisal, and pay and benefits. Monitoring is important. Monitoring is a form of a control system. I've set a goal. I've set some targets, and I must know whether I'm going in the direction or not. Monitoring is similar to what we do in controlling in Principles of Management, right? So I've got to monitor whether the job that I've given, has it been properly structured? So I evaluate the job evaluation. I also evaluate the person who's doing the job. There are two things, job and job holder. So job is evaluated, the job holder is appraised, performance appraisal. And then we talk about the pay, benefits, etc. And then we talk about maintaining. Workplace safety. Maintaining is all about, you know, at the workplace when you're working, there is a certain amount of minimum hygiene factors, we call it, social hygiene. So work safety, health and welfare policies, compliance with statutory requirements. What is the statutory requirements? They will say that this place should be safe, there should be no pollution, there should be fresh air, etc. And there are certain statutory requirements, like you need to have fire hydrants to see that in case of a fire, there should be easy availability of putting out the fire. Those are all the statutory. Statutory is something that is set by the authorities. Okay. Taking it further into 1.3, evolution of HRM. How did it happen? So let me take you to this brief history. Let me start off by telling you that HRM, there was nothing like an HRM ages ago. This terminology, this process just came in about 2 or 3 decades back. So those of you who have studied Principles of Management, if you remember, in our book, the second chapter is talking about development of management thought. So there we talk about the history of how the 9 contributors to management, their names are given there. Frederick Winslow Taylor, then we have got Henry Fayol, etc. Right? Now that journey that of 9 people, they have been given certain significant changes they have done. Right? Now I go back to the economic depression of the 1920s in the US. You have studied it in Principles of Management, 1920s, we had the economic depression, right? What happens in a depression? In simple layman's terms, production and consumption both come to a halt, or they're absolutely sluggish and slow, as a result of which the whole population goes through a tremendous amount of suffering. There's no food to eat, there's no food to manufacture, and everything goes haywire. There's a chaos in the society. In the extreme case, it can become an anarchy where the entire population will start fighting with the people. It happened recently in one country. Okay. So this is something that happened in 1920s. Now, man doesn't keep quiet. Man doesn't keep quiet when things go wrong. He will always fight it out, individually and collectively. They say necessity is a mother of invention. So what happened? As a nation, they fought back. And when they fought back, they really did a great job. Within the next few years, a country that was in a deficit, abject poverty, abject depression, from there they rose to become a sufficient country. And there were many drivers, many things that contributed to this. The important contribution was the mechanization of production. Machines came into picture. Earlier, production was being done in fits and starts. There was no machines. But machines came into picture, and with machines, there was engaging of manpower. Both these put together multiplied the production units. When I was manufacturing, say, 10 cars in a month, I was now manufacturing 100 cars, 1,000 cars. Okay? This is famously called as the second industrial revolution. Right? This is a background before I start this. So here I am taking you to 1890 to 1910. Scientific management of Frederick Winslow Taylor, F.W. Taylor, maintaining the welfare of workers, discipline of industrial psychology, advancement in employee testing and selection was done. You covered this in Principles of Management, right? Now, this was a period in which this movement was coming. Please remember, today we all know this is very, very common for us. What is so great about it, one can ask. Whenever you're studying management or any subject in the world, friends, always go to the history of the subject. Because what is happening today was not happening 20, 30 years, 40 years back. Okay? Remember that. So what happens in this case is, in this case, F.W. Taylor has done all this study. So everything was booming, and then suddenly there was something which he had already created this particular framework. So this, when in the latter date, this is a research done by him. At that point of time, there was nothing like this. Somebody like him was a visionary, and he started looking at it from a very expansive angle. And he said that we have to do scientific management of companies, which is what is Principles of Management you're studying. Maintaining the welfare of workers, we should see that the workers are taken care of. They are not just factors of production. They are human beings. They have their own drives, right? Discipline of industrial psychology. Industrial psychology means what? You're working in a company, the whole day you can't be the same productive person. The work affects you. Now I'm taking this video, for example. Now I won't be taking the video in a one stretch, perhaps. I have to stop for some time because there'll be a fatigue. Right? Now this is a fatigue. I'm just giving an example. So when you're working in a workplace, any work that you do continuously or on a routine basis, it is bound to affect your mind and your behavior. So industrial psychology is addressing the well-being, the mental and the physical well-being of the individual by studying the work parameters and adopting certain practices in the company so that the person's output is not affected, and moreover, his mental and physical well-being is also maintained. Rather, it should be healthy. So you work in a chemical plant which is making toxic chemicals. There are certain control systems to ensure that the industrial psychology of the person is taken care of. You work in an atomic plant, you have to be very, very careful. It's a physical, mental well-being also. When you work in the workplace, there should not be that stress, you know. It's important. Stress will be there for work, but the stress should not be making you crippled. It should not make your body and mind go. You should not feel into a state of hopelessness. Industrial psychology addresses that. Advancement in employee testing and selection. How employees are being hired for the company. This was not there those days, huh? This period you're talking about was not there, but he was a person. Taylor came with that bloody blueprint. In the blueprint, he said that people have to be, when you're hiring, you hire the right person for the right job. This is told long back. It happened much, much later as a science. Today it is scientific. It wasn't scientific those days. Okay. Then we come to the period 1930 to 1945. The famous Hawthorne studies done by Elton Mayo. Social and informal aspects of the worker and his productivity at the workplace. Increase in job satisfaction as means to increase productivity. This needs a certain mention, special mention. When the second industrial revolution took place, there was such an amount of, I would say, the whole nation was only focusing on production all the time. It was an industrial age. So every all hands on deck, we say. So everybody was only into production, so that the nation starts becoming prosperous. That was the basic idea. Now, who was producing? People. Now, how many of us gave a thought that people who are producing are having certain things which are being ignored by default, not by design? They fall sick, they have some issues at home, relationship issues, and they get affected by certain ambience and environment. This is something nobody thought in that direction. One of the earlier researchers, Elton Mayo, did this famous Hawthorne experiments, which we have studied in Principles of Management. And the number of studies he did, because he felt, he and his team, they felt that if the lighting conditions of the place is improved, is made better, the girls who are assembling the bulbs, they would be able to feeling, they'll feel good about the environment, and on their own, they will feel motivated and produce more bulbs. Simple thing. Today it is commonplace. The room where I'm taking this video shoot is a very, very comfortable room. Extremely comfortable. I can take on and on because I'm feeling nice about the whole place. Okay, but this is not the case in the past. People used to work in certain places which were very, very difficult, and it was all assumed that work means it should be like this and this is the way it is. So people used to just pull on, right? Hawthorne experiments confirmed the fact that human motivation will go a long way provided you give certain conditions. You start looking at them and care for them. The first time ever somebody talked about manpower or human resources, way back in this particular period, 1940, 1930 to 1945. Initially, these experiments were not very successful, as you know. But then he went on refining the methods of doing it. And finally, he established a correlation between working conditions or lighting conditions with the human motivation and the productivity and output and effectiveness. It's a very major breakthrough, right? Now, taking it further, friends, 1945 to 1965, this period, collective bargaining and labor relations with personnel management, within personal management, compensation and benefits administration, increase of importance to unions, negotiated paid vacations, paid holidays, insurance, coverage, etc. I've taken this term personal management, I've underlined it in the slide. Now, this is a term that came into existence in this period. I'll give a little background to this. Before this term came into picture, people were working and the employer was taking care of them. Because you're working with me, I take care of you. I was giving you a good pay package, compensation. And a few things were taken for granted, taken care of as far as the employee was concerned. As the days progressed, somewhere around this period, you notice that if I'm a car manufacturer, there are many people who are making cars. By this time, many car manufacturers came in. And my employee might migrate to a competitor. So I realized that I've got to see that I retain my employees. So I started looking at my employees. I started feeling that, hey, these guys are working with me. So I think I need to take care of them. Between 9 and 5, they are with me the whole day. So let me take care of them. Let me make them feel special because they are adding value to me. They are making my top line revenue and bottom line profits happen. This human touch came in. And this human touch is what was a part of the personal management thought process. So they gave them certain things like, you know, a subsidized canteen, for example, you know, food, free drive from, you know, say home to the office, and many such things. The personal management was focusing on 9 to 5. Between 9 and 5, you're working in the company. I'll take care of you. I'll see to it that I'm giving you the best so that you don't go elsewhere. You love working here. This was the paradigm behind it. Compensation benefits, etc. Now, collective bargaining, we talk about. What is collective bargaining? The creation of trade unions, workers' unions. It was unheard of those days. When mechanization took place, workers were going through heavy labor and they were actually exploited by certain companies and certain scenarios. So, to be democratic to them, right-thinking people said that, look, there should be somebody who can talk for them because workers are workers. They were illiterate and they are people who can't speak for themselves against the might of the management. So came union labor union, workers union, and with that came what is called as collective bargaining. Collective bargaining means what? One worker cannot go and put his grievance to the management. So 100 workers will come together, somebody will represent them, the union leader, and then he will go and talk to the management, and there's a collective bargaining. It has been given a bad name because, you know, always when we read about collective bargaining or union, we always think it's all fights. It's all, you know, lots of, because that's, it has been manipulated. A healthy union will bring about a healthy management and a healthy company. There are a lot of companies wherein there's a good harmony and a good amount of understanding of the bargaining process, right? Compensation benefits administration. Now, this was unheard of. What is compensation benefit? We have a chapter later on, which I'll be explaining. There was nothing like a structure. I pay you some money. I like you. No, it was very, very vague. It was not scientific. So they came out with a structure. Today we have basic, you know, dearness allowance in some companies. And then we have a gratuity, PF, etc. So these are all the compensation packages which are properly structured. That too at different levels of working, there is something which is predictable, which is very scientific. This is a part of the scientific management, right? Paid holidays, insurance coverage, all these things are today's a part of it. So in this personal management, this is the thing that was going on. Remember, I'm using the term 9 to 5, 9 to 5. Between 9 to 5, which means within the company, when you're there, I'll take care of you. This is what it meant. Before 9 and after 5, it did not much matter to me. What it means, I'm looking at you as an employee to whom I have to give goodwill, I have to make you feel good and special. So I, by default, I did not think about what happens before 9, before you come to the office, and what happens after 5 when you leave the office. This is the paradigm in which the personal management was operating. Now comes something interesting later on. Let's see what it is. 1965 to 1985, civil rights movement happened in the US. It reaches apex with the passage of Civil Rights Act of 1964. Civil rights means every human being has got his own thing to say and he has got his voice to voice up. It was a very major thing happening in 1964 in the US, Civil Rights Act. Okay, prohibiting discrimination on the basis of race. That is what used to happen was, it's a multiracial society in US. The blacks, the whites, the browns, the yellows, everybody come together and they work. Now, when people of dissimilar backgrounds come together, it happens in even our companies. There is always a chance for some discrimination. Somebody feels that I'm superior to you. And that shows in many, many forms. Not promoting the person, not giving him proper assignments, not rewarding him. All these nonsense will take place. Human beings are such, unfortunately. So there was a Civil Rights Act which set the tone saying that people have to be treated as equal. Whichever race or color or ethnic background you belong, you have to be treated equal. Color, gender, religion, national origin, etc. Gradually, equal employment opportunity and affirmative action became the key of HR responsibility. So it started smoothening all the creases. And it said that, look, everybody should be working in a very harmonious way because ultimately we're working for a company. Whether I'm a Chinese or an American or an Indian or a Canadian, that should not really matter. There was a lot of churning, a lot of, you know, people used to feel insecure working in certain places under certain people because of this discrimination. Now all those were brought to end. First and foremost, they created this act. Now creating an act doesn't ensure that people will treat you well. Now once an act is created, there is a legal legitimacy to that. When there's a legal legitimacy, what happens? You are in a position, if something goes wrong, you can actually take it to the court of law. So there was a little bit of fear in people who were discriminating earlier. So they said, fine. So it's important to have an act which is passed by the government, whichever country it is, and then the act becomes legally legitimized. And then things become easier. Now this is only setting the tone. Just because I put an act doesn't mean people will stop discriminating, because human beings are human beings. We discriminate each other, either by default or by design, or by self-righteous thoughts and actions. Thank you very much, friends.